Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Don't you love it when awareness reminds you to start the recording?
Well, yes, 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 I do. I have to tell you, I was standing here thinking, you know, I didn't hear the recording. Love that.
Love that. Thank you, awareness. Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly, because I didn't know how to tell you. So, it was all up to awareness, and awareness came through.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And how are you?
Great. Fabulous. Fantastic. Happy as I can possibly be. Just, you know, had a great day at the farm.
So tell us.
You expected that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. How about you?
Good. Yes. Very good. Yes. Thank
all
you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Announcements. Our new recording and listening class starts August 27th. So sign up right away to deepen recording and listening skills, explore the technique of interviewing, and train in receptivity to grace. The 5-week class is for old timers and beginners alike.
Receptivity to grace, Michael.
I love that.
Yes, and I think that's what we were just talking about, right?
Yes.
There's the grace, and we are here and present and paying attention so that we can receive it. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're living it.
Yes. Yes. And for this and other practice opportunities, please visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to get in the queue tonight to talk with Sherry, please press *6 and then 1 to make that show and get in the queue. And a conversation on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes is great. Okay, I think we're ready here, Sherry.
All right, here we go. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is June.
Hey, June.
Hi. Well, guys, keep practice. The recording didn't say unmuted. It's the first time I heard it say what it did say.
Hmm.
I don't know if
I never call in, so I have no idea about any of that stuff.
that was totally parenthetical. I was looking at the koan from Zen Flesh and Bones, the giver should be thankful.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been aware of that koan for many years, that book, that story, that old Zen story. And I did not really know what it meant.
Uh-huh.
And with this class, it's just obvious what it means. It's so obvious that I can't believe I didn't know what it meant. And so as a result, the voices in my head are having a little field day. Anytime I drift off, they're there with, don't tell anybody this. It's just
too embarrassing.
It's too embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
it's a good way not to drift off. It's good practice of not drifting off.
did what?
knowing that those voices are there is a good reminder not to drift off.
Yeah. Oh, yes, exactly. So, yeah, that they are a great inspiration for staying present. And, you know, I think it points at something, June, that we're all really, really familiar with. It's an orientation to life that we've all been conditioned with. So I hear a story, and it's something that, you know, it's part of what I'm around all the time. So it's not unfamiliar. I've read it. I've heard people talk about it. I know that. But I've never really considered it. Never really stopped to question, do I actually know what's being talked about here? Do I, beyond the surface level of assumption, conditioned assumption, that I know what this means, do I? Which, of course, is what makes koan practice so marvelous, because that's the whole point of it, right? We're going to approach this as if there's a lot about this that we haven't delved into, that we haven't seen clearly.
Yeah. Right?
That's just going to be our approach. So now we're really looking in a different way, through a different lens, whatever image there is for that. We're actually stopping and saying, you know, I don't know. Let me consider this deeply.
Yeah. So it's been pretty fun getting these every week. And I read the Flesh and Bones like 150 years ago and understood almost none of it. But I have persevered and I've read them all, got through that book, and then put it down. And there it lay for the next 125 mm-hmm. years.
Mm-hmm. To bring it back to our practice, we hear that all the time, right? There, we'll do something on one of our books, and people will confess that they assumed we had revised the book and they didn't know it, because they're sure that what we're talking about or that we're reading from that book was not in that book, because they would know it if it was in that book. Yeah.
I'm having that experience in my morning practice. I've been rereading our books and just stunned by what's in some of those books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, different eyes are reading it.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, it's why we should revisit. It really is. You know, for people who've been around practice for a long time, it may say the daily recollection every morning, right? And periodically, it's good to actually stop and consider, what is it that I'm saying?
Yeah.
Do I have the same understanding of that I did when I first learned about it and first memorized it? Or if I really stopped and examined it, would I find a completely different document?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's a good advertisement. Hopefully people will go back and pick up some of those books and see, have a chance to look into them and realize how different they are. Not the books, but the reader. The books are just the same as they've always been, but that reader is changing. And, that, you know, that's a big part of it. That is something that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate really doesn't want people to realize, is how much they're changing all the time, and especially people who do awareness practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. All right. Go happy.
You too.
Thanks for joining us, Sharon. And that was fabulous, Sherry. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Janice in Victoria.
Hey, Janice.
Hi. I just loved what was said about even doing the daily recollection and then something and just coming together in a different way, because I'm just a different person now from practice. That happens to me for sure.
Yeah, and it's wonderful to have that opportunity, isn't it? Because, again, the conditioning is so heavy to make us believe that, you're just the same person. See, there you go again. See? You see how you are? And, of course, if we identify with those old stories, then an argument could be made that, yeah, I am the same person. But when we step out of that identification and we're really here for something in this moment, we realize how different we are.
Yeah, exactly. And what I was calling in about was I just wanted to express my exuberance for the Zen Cooks workshop that I recently did. And so it's kind of like a promo for any that might be coming up, perhaps in the autumn, you might know about, I don't know, but I hadn't signed up for the others before, and it was just so much fun. So could I just say a bit about that?
Oh, yeah. Please.
Okay. Well, one of the things was just that it was available to me that Sunday morning to be able to do it. So step one, sign up, and then get a list of the ingredients. So actually make that, like, step two was there was an afternoon of shopping, and I went to various places just to get the things that I needed, because honestly, I have some spices, some, say, cumin and turmeric, for example, in my club cupboard, but only I know how old they are.
Right.
And I just thought, I'm going to make this shopping fun at the places I'm going, and I just asked, can I have 2 tablespoons measured out of cumin seeds and put in a little, container, and so forth like that. It was kind of the journey, and there was a lot of excitement in the shopping because I didn't know how these things would actually be all coming together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so for somebody who wasn't participating in that, or hasn't participated in, and there are other ones coming up, I do happen to know. I don't know the exact dates, but I might get a text as we go along that tells me about the next one, which I will pass on to you. But the thing about this most recent one is that it was, for many of us, an unusual menu. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though we might have a kind of a passing relationship with some of the names and have an idea about that, probably not something we've done a lot of cooking on. Right. And so the thing that I found so remarkable about it was that something so different, so unusual, as you say, the spices and the ingredients, nothing that anybody couldn't, unless you're really rural, couldn't manage to get. How is that going to all go together? And then to be taken just step by step by step through it, right? And so that there's no, there's no feeling of, I'm out of my depth here, or I don't know how to do that. Well, maybe I don't, but I've got somebody there who's telling me exactly, hold the bowl this way in your left hand and take them in your right hand, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it was, it was so kind and caring. And like examples, like sometimes I felt like, oh, I kind of get it, or maybe I've done something like this, or I know how to rinse rice mostly, but then what to do with the water from the rinsed rice? And then, you know, maybe like something I hadn't done much, kind of like sautéing, just heating up those cumin seeds, and, you know, until you just hear something or until you smell something. I mean, it only takes seconds, but all my senses were alert.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. then this was a very sweet thing for me, was that there had been a list of equipment that we might need, you know, and then you could tell from different gas or electric stoves or pots that fit with lids or lids on pots or something, cast iron things or whatever people happened to have available. Everybody yeah. could do it. And if somebody felt like they needed a bit more time, they just unmuted themselves and expressed that. And it was,
yeah.
oh, we're a Sangha, you know?
Yes,
it's,
yes.
That was so precious.
Just like, right, everything else we do. Yeah, if somebody's having difficulty, speak up and it'll be addressed. In a kind, as you say, a kind and supportive, you know, you don't have to feel like, oh, what a dunce I am. I'm probably the only one who doesn't know how to do this. None of that.
None of yeah. that. And yeah. One of the pieces of equipment I had was a grater that my mother had used, like in the 50s, I remember, as a child. And then the person who was guiding us through all of this said, oh, and I do it this way because I learned this from my mother in South India. And I just felt like even our ancestors were cooking together.
Right, yeah, yeah. And, well, I think you've done a wonderful commercial. Thank
okay.
you very much. And I got a message coming in while we've been talking. The next Zen Cooks workshop is on Sunday, the 27th of September.
Perfect. And mm-hmm. it was an economical and very tasty meal that lasted me 4 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that is the good news about it. That's another thing I love too, Janice. You get finished with it and you go, oh, and now I have this delicious meal. Yeah.
Yep.
Now, a lot of workshops, you know, you get finished with them, And you feel good because you've seen a lot of things. But this one, you've seen a lot of things, and you get to eat the results.
Exactly.
Yeah, very good.
Good right. nourishment.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Janice.
Gasho.
Gasho.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. And Sherry, I have another caller for us here.
All right. Wonderful.
All righty. Next caller. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry, it's Matt in Colorado.
Hey, Matt.
Hey. So I have this super compelling content that is all-absorbing.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And
I just moved to the edge of my seat, okay?
Uh-huh. Well,
so
I'm ready. I don't even think the content itself is even worth talking about. Because what I realized is, you know, it feels like, oh, I got to make a decision and I got to do stuff and stuff has to happen and I got to get on open air and I got to get clarity, right? Well, here's
uh-huh.
the thing. I look back at recordings from a year ago and it's the same thing. And it goes back farther than that. When I'm honest with myself, it goes back farther than that. And
yeah.
and so I had this panic moment. Like, did you ever see the movie The Shining?
No, I didn't.
Well, Jack Nicholson
is
unraveling in the movie, and his wife finds out that, you know, he's a writer, and she finds out that he's down there writing, but he's written the same sentence over and over for hundreds of pages. And I just had that image, like, sort of referencing the first conversation of this call, I just thought, well, God, is that really? I've made no progress in essentially more than a year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so what have you realized about that? Before I jump in and project all of you, which I am going to do.
Yeah, I don't know. It just, I think.
Shall I project all of you?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm gonna project that the content that you are dealing with is content that the same aspect of the personality deals with.
Yes.
Yeah. So when he's front and center, this is his deal, and so everything is exactly the same because he hasn't changed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you could probably ask someone else, either internally or perhaps you have external people who are happy to give their opinion, and there would be a different view of
very
the situation.
Much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But for him, it's the same thing every time.
Yeah.
And it's really fascinating to when we step back and look at it this way, because he sees the same thing, he thinks the same thing, he comes to the same conclusions, okay? he says the same things. He probably has 7 or 8 sentences that he pretty much repeats.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And each of those conclusions has been reached many, many times. There's just no reason.
Yes.
To keep
yes.
going there.
Yes.
It feels, you know, it feels like the, it feels like there's a fear of actually letting the thing go and continually revisiting it keeps it alive and feels like something's getting done, but nothing's getting done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And most people, Matt, if we're honest, can see this same process that you're describing happening in every aspect of our lives. That's why that's why we work with aspects of the personality, to try to help folks see that that's what's going on. The person who is anxious is always anxious.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that there is something to be anxious about. It's that that person is always anxious.
That's the just
person,
their role.
Yeah, it is just their role. It's just how they see things. And if you said, well, there's nothing to be anxious about, I mean, their body is a quiver. You know, their thoughts are racing. They're seeing all this. I mean, it's very real to that person. But it's only real to them.
Mm-hmm. So there's a part of me that just says, okay, well, that's great. How do I get out of this loop?
Okay. Well, of course, some of the tools that we use, you can interview him.
And I have done that. And actually, that was really helpful. And I have seen, I have made some progress with that, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then, you know, our tools are really to get clear about something.
Right.
The two-handed recordings, the interviewing, pretty much everything we do is to get clear about the karma, the conditioning, the beliefs and assumptions and all of that. Once we get clear on that, we run into this place, okay? So this is an aspect of the personality that we're dealing with. But egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, if we want its full ego, that illusion of separation from life, uses that aspect of the personality for its own benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so once a personality, so say this guy is, I don't know, how old do you think he is emotionally? When did this issue kind of start for him?
Oh, probably 4 or 5.
Okay. So emotionally, he's very young. And I don't know if we've talked about this, but somebody that I was reading, I think a psychotherapist, hypothesized that almost nobody reaches the age of 4 emotionally. And when I read that, I thought, yep, I think that's dead on. Now, we grow in all these other ways, of course. We get bigger and we get, you know, smarter in quotes and cleverer and all of that. But emotionally, we are that young. So he in himself does not have a need to stay stuck in this. Mm-hmm. He would like to go on with his life, right? This often comes up when we work with people who have had trauma, right? And we're conditioned to believe that we have to work with those people who've been traumatized, you know, these young people, and that we have to go back and we have to go through what, you know, everything that happened to. No, we don't. When they arise in the moment, they are here to be accepted and embraced. Mm-hmm. That's all they need. Okay, so he would be perfectly fine if somebody else would take this on, rather than going through it over and over and over and over and over again. Okay, mm-hmm. Because what he really wants is unconditional love and acceptance. That's what he wants. Yeah, mm-hmm. And so you can provide that for him. He doesn't need that from somebody else, even though he's probably been conditioned to believe he does, but he doesn't. He actually wants it from you, because every aspect of us wants a steady source of well-being for themselves.
Yes.
And that's what we can provide.
Okay, that's that resonates, because that's kind of exactly where I came to with the interview process, but I hadn't really fleshed it out beyond that.
Yes.
Like that aspect of personality.
Yeah, so when it arrives, and to keep talking with him, but also from a kind of a perspective of an older brother or a dad, you know, who can say, yeah, I know, and I've got this. I've got you. You don't need to worry about that. I've got this. And he'll relax and let you take care of whatever, as long as you're there for him.
Yeah.
Right? He will trust you and let you do that.
Okay, well, that's really helpful.
Good. And you will let me know, won't you?
Yes.
Yeah? Because these kinds of things, you know, are endlessly fascinating sounds superficial or glib. It's not that. You know, I really want to know how it goes, because it's a process of ending suffering.
Exactly, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Matt. That was fabulous, Sherry, and I was taking the lessons for myself. So thank you for that.
Yeah, good. Because it applies to all of us, right? Yeah. The content is slightly different for each of us, but a lot of the content is exactly the same for us. And the process certainly is universal.
So yes.
Good.
And Sherry, we're going to go to Good News Update, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Hello, this is Margaret.
Hi, Margaret. And Jen, your guest, Margaret, is now live, and I'll turn it over to you.
Excellent. Thanks, Michael. And yes, I'm pleased to be joined by Margaret, who is here to speak with us about her experience of practicing with the Now Step and using the practice of cue practice as a support for that. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm just still amazed by that last conversation with Sherry. Yeah. Just how relevant that is to my life and progress and practice too, and just listening to all the callers, it's really evident, like, life is the cue.
Amen. Yeah.
Yeah, and within the container of practice, being in the cue is a very, well, for me, it's a safe container to, just from which to share and speak and also really be with all the sensations that say no, you know, the anxiety, everything goes out of my brain.
Exactly. So, I mean, if I'm tracking what you're saying, Margaret, I think one of the things that's so brilliant about cue practice is that it is such a supportive, safe environment to practice. And I think, you know, this is probably where you're going to go, but practicing being with the Now Step, which is true everywhere in our life, but it's such a particularly helpful way to practice it because it's safe, it's supportive, all the things. And yet, for most of us, all the same things still come up. You know, the physiological reactions to it, all the things that come up everywhere else in our life do often come up when we're in cue practice. And so it's just such a brilliant way to practice it, being with it.
It really is. And, you know, my karma is around staying invisible because that, you know, being tucked into, that feels safer than being in the moment and being visible. And all those sensations that have kept me that way, my survival strategy, all those sensations are the same as when I'm, you know, on a practice call in the queue.
And then because you're on a practice call in the queue, you stay with it, right?
Right.
And you learn, oh, that was completely fine. In fact, it was pretty great.
Exactly. I just, and what I'm getting to experience is really a sense of adequacy and courage which has helped me immensely in other very difficult content in my life.
Right, because, so again, you know, as we practice, we know being here, present, in the moment, letting life inform, right? That's the Now Step. We all know on some level that that's, quote, the answer. And even from our own experience, that's the obvious way to go.
Right.
Yet, when we're in situations, it can feel so compelling that, I got to think about this. And, like if you take cue practice as an example, well, I mean, do I really have something to say? I mean, I got to make sure I'm really prepared and have I thought it through? And, I mean, what's going to happen if, and those conversations in our head can feel so compelling that we stay with it. We stay with the conversation. We get lost in the conversation, might be a better way to say it. And we're unavailable to the Now Step. But as you're describing, when you do something like cue practice and you have the experience over and over again of being utterly cared for and led, guided in that, it gives you the courage to practice that in other places in your life and prove that same thing to yourself in those places as well.
Right, because it feels like, you know, outside of like practice cues, we can end up, you know, I can intellectually know that, yes, this is a Now Step practice moment, but it's it's just me and ego and whatever, you know, hopefully the practitioner's there too, but often it's just,
yeah,
I'm just kind of being in a conversation with ego and something drops in and I'm like, oh, later.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, or no.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have personally kind of, for me, it's like I've spent a lot of my life being afraid to do the thing, whatever the thing is, big or small, is like running it off, don't say something, just anything but doing that thing that, you know, life has dropped in.
Right.
That feels too scary.
And what has been your experience as you've been practicing with that and actually heeding that, the still small voice, if you will? So those messages drop in for whatever it is now and actually doing it. What's your experience of that?
I've, just in general in life, I've just had my confidence has, just confidence and trust in life has just opened in a way I've never thought would be possible.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah. And, you know, I still get all those feelings when I'm in the queue, but it's like all various participation in practice supports the now step and us, you know, me participating as present as I can be. And so all of it together is a miracle.
That's really neat, Margaret. I don't know if I've ever really seen it that way, that we're all practicing that, right, as practitioners.
Right.
Many people now do Q practice. I think that's a much stronger part of a lot of people's practice now than it was at some point. And so what you just said is so, so brilliant. As we go around in life, you know, it's really, I think it's habitual for a lot of us to be lost in conditioned mind. And we can guess that's probably true of a lot of people around us too, right? That's what they're...
Yeah.
You know, what's happening for people is they're lost in a conversation. And so that essence of who we are can be hard to experience. But that's so amazing what you just said, that that's one of the things that makes a practice setting so extraordinary, is that not only if I'm in the queue and then I either get called on or I don't, I'm having my own experience of that and my own experience of breaking through that and my own experience of that deepening trust and confidence, but that with every single call, we're witnessing that same process.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Without all of our participation, there would be no practice.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And person after person after person is offering that authenticity as it comes through them.
Yeah, and for me, it just increases my courage to like speak about real life things, not just on sort of the out, you know, not the idea of you know it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I've really appreciated that level of honesty that we can share and experience within the privileged environment.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And it really does, it's such a support for all of us to realize it's all practice and there is nothing wrong, right? Because it's so easy to feel like I'm back here with my little horrible secret that, you know, if anyone knew. And then, again, to watch person after person blow through those belief systems and realize, well, that's so for me too. There's nothing that's outside practice. There's nothing that's wrong. Yeah.
And it's really been in the last year or two since I've really upped participation and received some specific guidance and, you know, just like actually saying the thing, doing the thing that, you know, that for many years just was unspeakable. And
Wow.
It's it's so freeing to just keep showing up for practice, trusting the moment, and, you know, doing our best.
Yeah, which is extraordinary.
It really is. Yeah, it is extraordinary.
Yeah, it truly is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Margaret, thank you for being with us this afternoon to talk about it. It's a brilliant topic. It really is.
Well, thank you. Thank you for, I should say, thank you for offering it, but I guess I responded to life and said yes before I could be talked out of it. And here I am.
Yes. All right. Yes.
All right, thank you.
Margaret. All right, go happy.
Go happy.
And Michael, we'll turn it back over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Margaret. And welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And Sherry, the word that came up for me a lot was participation, and then...
Oh, my gosh.
Participation there.
Yeah, I'm wearing the shirt right now. I'm wearing the participate shirt. And what Margaret said, I'm with Jen, just kind of gobsmacked by the simplicity of the sentence and the magnitude of what it means. Without all of us, there would not be practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There wouldn't. There wouldn't. And so again, what she's pointing at, it takes tremendous courage to step up, to, you know, push those little, whatever you push, to get in the queue, and you're going to be unmuted, and you're going to talk, and all these people are listening, and it's the last thing ego wants us ever to do, and yet it's every person finding the courage to do that that inspires all the rest of us to find the courage to do that.
Yes, exactly so.
It's
exactly
just, it's breathtaking, really.
Self-reinforcing, virtuous circle. Fabulous.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, if without all of us, we would all be at home. I mean, I suppose we'd be doing whatever it is that we're doing. But the odds that we would be spending our lives with egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate rather than a group of courageous, tenacious, is fearless the same thing? People who are just facing everything they've been taught to believe they can't face, going through stuff that they've been taught to believe that you just can't stand it. You just won't be able to stand it. And people are just going through it and going through it in front of everybody else so that everybody else can say, well, gosh, you know, if she can do it, if he can do it, well, I think I can do it. I bet I can do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Fabulous. Fabulous.
Mm. Mm. So good.
And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller. You are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Alicia from Seattle.
Hey, Alicia.
Hello. It's kind of amazing. I got unmuted after that particular good news. I'm sort of recovering from that call or that conversation.
Mm.
And the thing that just comes up right away is, you know, I've been listening. I couldn't possibly state or overstate how much I've learned from all the people, you know, who call. And I've done all these things to get here, like clearing my calendar. I'm just sitting here. I'm, you know, and it's, so I feel just so happy that I made it to be here. And I'm, yeah. So yes, I'm all the gratitude for this, you know, framework that we can talk as a group.
Well, and I just want to underline what you just said, because that's key to the whole thing. I mean, obviously, you realize how important practice is for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you did what needed to be done, I'm guessing, against some pretty big resistance.
Yeah.
To get here. Yeah. I mean, it takes a lot.
It really does. And I think about, there were a few calls that I have listened to in the past few weeks where their moms who called, and or maybe mm-hmm. I don't have the timing right, but there were moms, and I just thought, I wouldn't know those people on the street, but if I could tell them how grateful I was, you know, to hear their story, which also feels like my story,
mm-hmm.
And just that, like, as you say, like bringing us together in that way, I get to see, like, okay, so at least I won't believe the story that somehow this is just me. Like, I'm the only
exactly.
one.
Exactly. I am
you
not
know.
Alone.
Yes, right.
And that's huge.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's just huge. So I just want to take a moment to see what comes. I think that I came in a little late with the caller who, what my brain got stuck on with the last caller was the, I'm here over and over and over again in the same place. The,
mm-hmm.
And I have, I have noticed, actually I had a nice friend sort of point out something to me that I didn't quite realize, was happening. And it was around, I guess, resentment. Like the person said to me, I was saying, gosh, my job is fine, but for some reason I'm just agitated. I was just wondering, why I was in a sort of a state of unhappiness or misery is too strong, but just what is going on here? And the person suggested, like, my resentment for a few people or one in particular seems to have taken a life of its own.
Mm.
And maybe I might want to, just consider, and so I did, because I thought, oh, I didn't know. I mean, clearly I was talking about it, not really aware, right, of what I was doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly how it goes. Because once we get identified with a certain aspect like that, that's our whole reality. There's no self-consciousness in that or self-awareness, right? It's just, this is how it is. This is what's true. Let me tell you about this.
And it is exactly like that. The idea that it's not true had not entered my mind. Like
right. No, it wouldn't. It couldn't.
Right. Right. Because it's objectively this experience. Anybody is, would objectively have this experience or whatever. So I tried to then do, like, okay, well, clearly I'm not here. I'm not paying attention. This has just been over the past few days at work. I've tried, and I'm working remotely, so there's some challenges here. But I've tried to see, like, when is this coming? Like, how does this come up? Or when is it?
Yeah.
When is it there?
Yeah.
And it turns out it isn't just one person. It comes up at a low level. I mean, in the past few days, I almost think it's half the time. And what comes up is it's a quiet voice, kind of, but it's a strong physical feeling of tension. And the voice is like, this isn't, like, why can't, it's one version of, like, they're not meeting the standard, right? This is substandard. Why is it this way? This is ridiculous. And it's, constant is too strong of a word, but it's enough that I realize, oh, well, that's why I'm so tense. And then I'm sure when I'm, talking to people, it's, maybe that this person was not in my work, thankfully, but, I'm unloading the tension. So the only thing I've seen so far, other than the OG that is bigger than I thought, is the one moment I had that I gave me a little bit of light was this idea of like, okay, what if there isn't a standard? Like in other places, like in practice, I've learned to, you know, okay, I'm going to drop those standards. That's not, I just have never, it's never occurred to me to do it here in this setting. And so that's sort of where I ended though with my, that was today, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, and I bet you have a pretty good feeling that Ego, your coworker there, is pretty invested in your attention continuing to go to that, right? Because there's the juice, right? There's the upset and the unhappiness, the dissatisfaction, and of course that's, you know, that's what ego feeds on. Without without something wrong, it really doesn't have a place. So you know, just the work you've done to see that has to make a tremendous difference, because it doesn't matter, you know, okay, so what? You know, so what? The point is, you're unhappy.
Right. That is,
you know,
the point.
So, you know, you're judging other people, you're, you have these standards that maybe you're not even meeting them, but you use it against them, you know, all the conditioned crapola that can get thrown at us. But the point is, it's making you unhappy. It's taking the fun out of your life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is an argument for dropping standards, isn't it?
Yes. I know, it really is. Like, what if? You know, that's...
Yeah, what if? Yeah. What if? And beyond that, you know, we get into the things of, well, standard or no, this is what's happening. So I can either be over here, you know, rolling my eyes and complaining, or I could be present and addressing the issue. I could decide that giving people a break might be something I would rather do than being in constant criticism.
Well, and that's part of what I have been so thrown by in this setting, in this sort of work setting. Like, I just simply, I'll just say these words out loud, just don't think of myself as that kind of person. I'm putting it in quotes. Like the person who is.
Yeah.
You know, that's just unpleasant, you know, all the things.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've just been like, oh boy, a little thrown.
And so all those pieces, oh my God, maybe, oh, what if I'm more like them than I thought? And once we get that, yeah, of course I am. Who's projecting it, for God's sake? Yes, of course it's me. And we can have a little chuckle over that, because, yeah, that is how conditioned human beings are, and I am a conditioned human being, ergo, the odds are really good that I'm like that too, so good. Now, how would I like my life to be?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's such an important reminder about the projection, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Right.
How do I know that?
Right.
How do I know
that?
All right. Well, okay. Thank you.
Yeah,
that's
thank
wonderful.
You.
Yeah,
great
thank
to
you.
Talk to you.
For, yeah. All right. Well, go happy.
Okay, go happy. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Alyssa. And Sherry, we have time for at least one more caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Deepa.
Hey, Deepa.
Hi, Sherry. So I wanted to check something out. I've been noticing recently, it's been going on for a little bit, that there is something that's operating about how things need to be when I'm old, within quotes, and nearing the end of my life. That things need to be squared away and everything needs to be done and the slate needs to be cleared. And then there is all of this projection and judgment when I am with older people that I think haven't done that. And,
I'm not surprised.
And so the conversation earlier that people have referenced to already just today on open air about somebody showing up, the same person is having that experience.
Yes.
So that's that was very, very helpful, that the guidance that I heard, which is, the like you said, it's the same 5, 6, 7 sentences that just get rolled out.
Yes, exactly so. Yeah. Yep. Yes. And so this is not perhaps the point, but I'm going to tell you this anyway. And that is, here's one of the things that people do not understand who are not old. Okay? People assume that when people get old, they are different.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The odds are so good that we are not. So, in other words, the person who is old sees everything pretty much the way they did when they were young. Different things perhaps are annoying or challenging or whatever, you know, whatever that kind of a framework is. But there isn't it's an unusual person who says, I want to take care of all of this so that I don't leave a mess for anybody else. That's a person who probably lived their life that way. It didn't occur to them because they got old.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's why it's so important that wherever we are in life, we are living the way we want to be living at the moment when we go. Because, of course, the assumption is that people assume they're going to get old.
Mm-hmm.
But we all know a lot of people who didn't get old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And so where were they? They were right in the middle of their life when they went. So can we be absolutely, the way it plays out for me most, Deepa, is in relationship. So, you know, as I'm sure you've heard me talk about any number of times, you know, I was very young. My mother got in the car to drive off and visit her sister and was killed on the way. I never saw her again, right? And so I know, I've known all my life, that you can see somebody in one moment and then never see them again. So I don't want any relationships in my life that if I don't see that person again, I feel unfinished with. So that kind of living our lives such that I could go at any moment and everything would be as up-to-date as I can possibly make it, we could all take that on and probably then have less resentment or less misunderstanding about people who don't do that.
Well, that's huge. That's huge, Shay.
It kind of is, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay.
Because we can understand. You know, if people are approaching things the way I am, well, that answers that question about why are they doing what they're doing. I can look at how what I'm doing, and I can know what they're doing.
Yeah, there is definitely that, because the ego is doing a number on me and karma, that that separation, that they and then I. That was beautiful. Yes, please.
Well, it's just that we see it everywhere, right? That if only things were the way I want them to be, then I would be all right. And it's, you know, it's kind of a variation on that theme,
But that's the one, because we have so many people in Sangha who have parents who are getting really old. And, yeah, of course, we have a lot of people in Sangha who are getting really old themselves. But just to have that in mind, that almost nobody really gets it, that this is all so very impermanent.
Thank you, Shay.
You are so very welcome.
Deepa Show.
Gosho.
Thanks for joining us, Deepa. And Sherry, that was a fabulous end to a fabulous show.
Well, good. Well, thank you for hosting us.
My pleasure. My privilege.
All right.
Thank you, and thank everyone.
Right. Thank everyone, and let's all go happy.
Go happy.